Which Bruin will exceed expectations this season?
Can I start? I have three, but I'm just going to go with one first because I don't want to steal you guys, and then I'll get to the other ones. So my number one, like I'm feeling so confident about this, is Mason Lauri. He, and I don't think it's for lack of high expectations for him, because I think his, I think after last season, people know that he's going to progress and he's going to get better, but I think the jump is going to be massive. I just have this really strong feeling after watching the way he played in preseason and in the practices. I feel like I looked maybe a little bit more closely at what he was doing in practices than games, because in games I was looking at, you know, like Lysel, some of the other guys were wondering if they're going to make the team. And he just gives people no space, and he just looks so confident, and he looks like he's in the right position. And I think he's going to have the biggest jump of anyone on the team from what he was last year to what he's going to be this year. And I feel very confidently about that.
Yeah, I'm with you, Bridget. I have him personally. I have him topping 30 points, and I could see it being closer to 40. Just depends how does he get PP one time if McAvoy struggles. And but either way, I have Lauri comfortably around 30 points this year, which for a first full season in the NHL is going to be something to watch. And his ceiling is just going to keep growing, I think, offensively. I guess I'll just go quickly, and forgive me, Scott, if this is who you're picking, because we haven't discussed this. I'm going to go with Elias Lindholm, and I know that as a top UFA on the market this past summer, expectations should be high for him as a center, but he is coming off of a down year offensively. 44 points last year between Calgary and Vancouver, which I believe was his lowest point total in 5 or 6 years. Now, his career high was 82 points in 2021-2022 when he was playing with Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau in Calgary. Now, this year, I feel like he's in more of a similar situation to that Calgary situation. Instead of Tkachuk and Matthew Gaudreau, he has David Pastrnak and Pavel Zacha, who is less established than his previous line mates that I'm talking about at the time. But I still think that In a larger role on a contending team with one of the elite players in the world, I would expect Elias Lindholm to be much closer to his offensive ceiling than his offensive floor in 24-25. And I don't know if a lot of people feel that way. I think a lot of people are maybe down on the player. He's not a true number one center. He's an overpayment, whatever the case may be. So I'm not sure if Boston fans have the highest hopes for Lindholm. I think they're hoping he plays well and expect him to be a good player, but I don't know if they're expecting him to be a 70-plus point player, which I do have him being this year.
Maybe that works to his advantage. It's always easier to be a fan favorite when the bar is lower and you jump right over it.
Yeah, I feel like people are expecting, like, oh, you know, maybe he'll be right around where Coyle and Zacha were last year, which is right around 60 points, or where Lindholm was 2 years ago when I think it was at 64. I don't have it in front of me, but the year after his 82-point season. Yeah, but Brian, I'm with you. Like, I think he's going to be in the 70s. I don't think he's going to match that 82 points. I don't think he's going to score 40 goals like he did in that 21-22 season. But I definitely think 70-plus points is in play, and I'll go out on that branch as well and predict that he does do that.
I have more thoughts on that coming up, because it actually goes with something else that we're going to talk about. But Scott, did you have another one?
Yeah. So my pick for some pick seed expectations is someone we already touched on, but Morgan Geeky. I do think he's going to get to 50 plus points. I think he is going to take another jump. I think he'll have 20 plus goals, maybe 25. But yeah, I think, now, I don't think he's going to stick on the second line all season, because I do think they're probably going to eventually make a trade and bring in someone a little more bona fide, lengthen their lineup out a little. Geeky probably ends up back in the third line. But I think he is not going to look out of place on the second line. I think he's not going to hurt Marchand and Coyle. I think he'll do a good enough job. And it'll instead of it being a gaping hole where we're like, holy crap, the Bruins need to make a trade sooner rather than later, because they're just not scoring enough. They're not getting enough from the second line. I think he's going to be a good enough fit there that, you know, it'll be a good enough second line. And then you're looking at upgrading from good enough to great to try to go make a cup run instead of from like, oh my God, this is a disaster to we just need something there. Like I think he's going to be better than, you know, just like a plug-in space filler. I see him producing quite a bit there and more than last year and taking that jump to 50 plus points.
Yeah, he was on my list too. So I had three, like I mentioned. Lorai was one, Geeky was another. And my third one was because I just think the bar that people have set for him is low. And that's Jonas Kopparsalo. I think that people are really just because, and it's rightfully so, last season the numbers weren't good and the year didn't go as he would have liked. But I think his numbers when he's with Boston are going to be better. I think working with Bob Asenza is going to help him out and having not that large of a workload. We talked about this before. He was in games for, you know, he wasn't getting pulled from games that he was playing bad because they just were leaning on him more than they were leaning on anyone else. And he played a big chunk of Ottawa's games last year. So I think he was set up to fail a little bit more in Ottawa than he will be here. And he doesn't have that kind of pressure on him. He's going to get a smaller portion of the game. Swayman, like you said, maybe gets 55 or so. And Kopparsalo, I think my prediction is, performs well enough. I think you said this as well, Scott, like he performs well enough league average or maybe slightly above league average in his performances, maybe steals you a game or two here, a few points down the line, and just looks better than he did last year. And like I said, the reason I think he exceeds expectations is because I think the expectations have been put fairly low.
Well, on the other end of the spectrum, we have the question, which Bruin do we feel may disappoint this year? And I'll start, Bridget and Scott. I hope I'm wrong with this. Obviously, this is kind of a question that there's no way to answer this question without being a villain, right? But in the spirit of answering the question that Scott posed to us, I'm going to give a player who I don't think they're going to disappoint, or I don't think they could potentially disappoint due to a lack of play. I think that Matt Patra is a player that may leave people disappointed throughout the year because maybe he is not available as much as people hope. And I think that right now you're kind of seeing it. He gets hurt in the preseason game on a hit from Ristolainen. That's the NHL. And I know he beefed up in the offseason. I think he gained like 10 or 12 pounds of muscle, hopefully, from what was reported. Obviously, he had surgery last year from an injury that put him on the shelf, ended his rookie season prematurely. So the old adage is the best ability is availability. And I think that might be an area where it could give him challenges. He might come back from whatever injury he has right now and never look back. And he hopefully, knock on wood, he never gets injured again in his career. But I would say that would be something that would disappoint me, is if he's not available as much as we hope he is.
It was certainly disappointing when last year he had his season cut short. So I guess in that way, that is an uninsulting answer, because it's just he would be disappointed as well. I think everybody would be, especially because I think he did a lot of work this offseason to try to make sure this didn't happen.
Yeah, that's a good one. I had considered that. I thought about picking Jonas Kopparsalo here, but that felt like a little too easy. Like Bridget said, like, I think expectations are so low that even if I'm like, I could sit here and say, I think he's going to be league average or worse, but like, I'm not sure how many people expect him to be a whole lot more than that. It would be more of a counter to the people who would like, oh yeah, he's going to be just fine. He's Linus Ullmark. Like I explained on the last episode, what Kopparsalo has done three of the last 4 years is significantly worse than anything Linus Ullmark ever did in Buffalo. So I'll go a little I guess, edgier with my pick, and I will say Nikita Zadorov, who I wouldn't
be picking fights with Nikita Zadorov.
True. By the way, our friends over at Brunch, over at What Chaos,
they have Black, two podcasts.
Yeah, that they I think they do technically still have Brunch. I don't know how often they're still posting there, but they have Nikita Zadorov on Tuesday for an interview. So as soon as you're done listening to us, you can probably listen to that. But yeah, I think he's gonna be fine. But I think people have expectations that he's like really gonna take this decor to another level, or he's really gonna elevate Charlie McAvoy, be, you know, a better partner for him than Grizzlick. And I'm just not sure he's even gonna play with Charlie McAvoy all that much. Like, just to start the season, it's gonna be McAvoy with Hampus Lindholm. You know, I think where Zadorov is starting the year on the third pairing with Andrew Peak is probably where he's going to be most of the time. Like, that's kind of more what I see him as. And that's because I like Hampus Lindholm and he's locked into the top four. And because I think Mason Lauri takes that jump into the top four to piggyback on, you know, Bridget picking him as exceeding expectations. So I think Zadorov probably settles in as a third pairing defender who is physical, makes some mistakes because he takes some unnecessary risks, and on the whole is just fine. Helps bring an important physical presence, but doesn't go like above and beyond to, you know, elevate the entire decor to some new level.
Brian, should I tell Nikita next time I talk to him that Scott said that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. And I'm glad Scott had that take, because if I didn't go with Patra and I had to go with somebody else, I was probably going to go the same route Scott did for the same reasons. But yeah, same, everything that Scott said, I echo. Like, I think he's going to be good, and he's going to contribute to what I believe is the best decor in the Eastern Conference and one of the best in the NHL.
I think he's going to be entertaining. I think he has the potential to cause some moments of, you know, oh, what is he doing? Like the preseason game where everyone freaked out when the puck got past him. But I mean, that could happen in the regular season. There could be some oopsies, but there's also, I think he's also going to be very entertaining. And I agree with Scott. I think Lindholm McAvoy is such a good pair that if the pair isn't Zadorov McAvoy, that doesn't bother me in the slightest. And I think that might be the right move anyway. Cool. So a third pair on the Bruins is not an insult in any way, shape, or form.
Can I just add to getting Hampus Lindholm going is a huge factor and strategy, I think, for Boston right now. I was one of the people Scott kind of was talking about, where I could see Zadorov playing with McAvoy and kind of freeing him up a little bit, letting him play bigger than he is. But at the same time, Zadorov can play that third pair role that you guys are mentioning and be great there. And at the same time, it allows Lauri to get into a top four role, as you mentioned. But we talk about a Bruins offense where there's some question marks, right? Charlie Coyle, Brad Marchand gaining chemistry with Morgan Geeky. Just in general, right? Lindholm and Zaka and Pasternak have to get that chemistry. So much of your offense, I mean, your offense starts in the D zone, 200 feet away from the scoring net. And I think that the transition game with Lindholm and McAvoy, I just think it encapsulates what the Brewers are going to try to do, which is jump back a couple of years ago where you're starting that rush offense from the D zone. And I think when Lindholm is playing with Carlo, he's just not playing that same role. So I think it frees up Lindholm. And I think that bodes well for the rest of the team.
And he doesn't necessarily have the opportunity to be in that role just because of the way that D pair has been used in the past. I just had this pop into my head, so I'm just going to say it because this goes back a tad, because I was thinking back in my head to who Jim Montgomery said is maybe going to exceed expectations this season and who he's been impressed with. And that's Johnny Beecher, who he said he thinks looks better this year. And he also talked about how Andrew Peak fits in Boston and how he likes his fit. So those are two guys that are at the bottom of the lineup that we don't like, we maybe wouldn't have thought of in this situation because the expectations are what they are. They're not, you know, over the top high, but they're also not that those players are going to have bad seasons at all. So that was just, I just wanted to bring that up that Montgomery mentioned those two guys is maybe making a step this season in the way that they fit and what they can do and having good off seasons as well.
Bridget, and, did you have a disappointment?
Yes, I was going to say it was kind
he's
of
trying to avoid it.
This is like Bridget's least favorite thing to do.
Yeah, this I don't like predictions. You know that. I'm not a gambler. I've mentioned this many times, and much to the chagrin of, in particular, Scott. But this
Bridget skipped Sunday's podcast because she thought that was the preview one where she had to make all the predictions, and we faked her out.
That's not what happened. That is not what happened. But this one I have a hard time with just because I don't want to say anything negative about someone who hasn't had a chance to prove themselves. And, you know, these are the ones where you can look really stupid where it's like, oh, you said this person's going to have an awful season and they just played amazing and you look like a jerk. So
I'm Riley Tufte.
Nope. So I picked someone that I think has something to prove that we just haven't had a chance to see yet. And I think Max Jones maybe doesn't end up in Boston after a few weeks and after Potcher comes back or after they decide on the roster, whether or not he fits into it or not, I'm not sure. So, and that's mostly based on not having a whole lot to go off of. So I think the first few weeks of the season are really important for him to make a statement. And if he doesn't, he probably ends up in Providence. Maybe he comes back and forth, but for him, the early part of the season is probably going to determine whether or not he disappoints, I guess.
See, I like that because I can disagree with it. Cause I thought about Max Jones as one of my exceeds expectations, but I couldn't quite bring myself to do it because he missed so much of camp that I do think he's going to get off to a slower start, but I like his game and I think he's going to stick and be, you know, if not like, not necessarily the most refined player, at least someone who really helps kind of set like the physicality, the forechecking, just sort of like the attitude of the team. Like, I eventually just see him being a really good fit with Beecher and Kastelic in particular.
Does his contract allow him to go to Providence?
No. They would have to waive him, and I think he would almost definitely get claimed.
Yeah. But in any event, though, sentiment is still there, Bridget. And, yeah, like, it's unfortunate we weren't able to see him with a full camp. But, you know, honestly, if it people are going to think he's my cousin or something because I've said his name so many times. But if it wasn't for the camp that Cole Koepke had, I honestly think it would be more of a lock for a guy like Jones. But if he keeps playing the way he did in camp, he could be a player that forces issues and you know, could definitely exceed expectations because there are none for him. Nobody knew who he was.
Say, he probably already did just by making the opening night roster.
Absolutely.
True.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. I'm looking up what Max Jones' contract is bigger than what Koepke's would be. So
yeah, Jones is what, 1 million?
Yeah,
one a year, yeah. And Koepke probably gets minimum, which is under a million. So maybe that factors in. You know, sometimes it's a tough decision with the cap. So
well, and they'll both have a chance to prove themselves simultaneously because yeah, with some injuries up front to Patra. They both look to be in the lineup tomorrow night. So may the best man win. Scott, did you have another thought on that? It looked like you were looking something up maybe. Otherwise, we can move on to the next question.
I was going to say one other name I would throw out as a disappointment, potential disappointment. I'm predicting we're not going to see very much of Fabian Lysell this season. So if that falls short of people's expectations, then yeah, I think there'll be some disappointment there. I do think we'll see his NHL debut. I think he's going to get called up at some point, but I don't really see him sticking. I don't see it being more than, you know, a few games here or there. I come out of training camp just not really feeling great about him, because it kind of just feels like the same old story, which is like he flashes, you see the skill and the speed and what he can do in spurts, but it's just not there consistently enough.
I don't know how you can be drafted 3 years ago and not all summer be chomping at the bit to get to Warrior for training camp and just go balls to the walls for 3 weeks. I mean, you have he got sense getting sent down. Sorry for the crude language, Bridget. hashtag locker room talk. He had those two games in Washington and Quebec City after getting sent down to Providence, and he didn't do much with it. And so you would just think that just pure effort alone, he would just be going crazy out there. And outside of that 1 week where he had a great game, a couple good games and a few good practices, but not nearly enough. So definitely disappointing. And if he gets an opportunity again, buddy, you got to make a lasting impression, because you're running out of time in Boston, at least. I know he's 21, but he might as well be 25 at this point. I mean, 3 years in the system. Matt Patra's 19, maybe 20 now. And there's,
he's 20
now. It's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Time's right. Ticking.
Yeah, definitely. And there's not really a natural fit if he didn't beat out the guys that he had to beat out in camp to get that spot.